You say, one for the trouble, two for the time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
Bad Five Freddy told me everybody's slide. DJ is spinning, I said, my. Flash is fast, flash is cool.
You say one for the trouble, two for the time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
Welcome back to the Mark Steiner Show. I'm Denzel Mitchell, filling in for Mark Steiner on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9, Voice of the Community. Call in with your comments at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, or you can tweet me at Five Seats Farm. Comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, or send us an email at talk@steinershow.org. Today we have with us two esteemed guests, Dee Watkins, author of The Cook Up, a crack rock memoir. His first book was the B-side, Living and Dying While Black in America. Watkins is also a columnist for The Salon. His work has been published in New York Times, The Guardian, Rolling Stones, and other publications. Good morning, brother. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And also here I've got my good friend, Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields, co-founder and senior director of education and innovation for the Cambio Group and author of the new and recently published book, Chaos, The Making of an Urban Teacher. How you doing, bro?
Yo, what's up, bro?
So I wanted us to sit down, get together and talk about this new Netflix series, Get mm-hmm. Down. Mm-hmm. So this is a show that... chronicles the inception of hip-hop culture, kind of as disco is dying away and hip-hop is being created in 1977 in the South Bronx, and it features these young high school students and their struggles coming up in the South Bronx. Have y'all seen the show?
Oh, man, I love it, brother.
I saw it twice.
Yeah, you watched both.
Yeah, and I don't really watch TV, man, so that got me, brother. But being in the barbershop, they put me down with it. So, yes, I watch it quite a bit.
Right. So this is a Netflix series, so mm-hmm. it's two parts. So the first part has been released. It's six episodes. And I have to say, you know, I'm not a big television watcher either. Most recently, because I think of this resurgence of culturally relevant and what I would say culturally appropriate mm-hmm. TV shows, has kind of brought me back in front of the screen and really created some family time in terms of education and entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like the show was really good. You know, the first episode, you know, was an hour and a half long. You know, so it was almost like sitting down to watch a movie, which mm-hmm. we're a little surprised at, and I felt like it was kind of sprawling, and a little overambitious and a little confusing. But as we continued to watch the episodes, things started to even out. They developed the characters, man, and I really thought that it was very, very well done mm-hmm. As a father and as a as an educator. So you know, there's a lot of characters, a lot of themes. You know, it was a little hard to follow along, but I really like the way the show addresses what was happening in the Bronx in 1977. Mm-hmm. And so now me, you know, I'm pretty young. So during that time, I was only 1 year old, mm-hmm. And I was in Oklahoma as well. So
which had a huge hip hop scene, I'm sure.
Right, huge, massive. Cats were breakdancing on top of hay bales,
tipping cows over,
tipping
DJing,
cows, all that.
The Mecca
party at the right. farm, brother, the right. Red Farm, the Mecca of hip hop music.
Exactly. So it was a little, you know. So all of this for me, all of this kind of came together through reading and research. Yeah. But I know you was a little closer to the fire.
Hey,
Chicago.
Man, you know, I'm from the Shy. They call it Second City, man. I loved it, man. I loved it for several reasons, man. Not only am I a hip-hop head, but, you know, two cultures that I represent. Yo soy Boricua, so the Puerto Rican mm-hmm. culture, which I love, you know. Growing up in Latin America, seeing depictions of people of color who speaking a rich language. And then also, you know, black folks who grew up in urban America. And then also, not only just about the transition of the music, man, I'm from Chicago. So when you talk about house, when you talk about disco, you're talking about the resurgence of house music and then also hip hop music. So I loved it for the culture. I love the depiction of the people of color in there. I love the grittiness, the griminess of New York at the time. I talk to my buddies all the time about New York. I'm like, man, I can't believe cats would survive. I knew the Shy was out of control in the 70s and 80s, but New York was like a freaking dump, man. Mm-hmm. And out of that came this resurgence of music. And beyond the, you know, the people of color, you know, you got a rich history of not only just Latin and African culture, but then you also, what people forget about, the presence of Jamaican culture, man. You know, Kool Herc and all these folks who came from the Caribbean, man, who brought that unique sound, which was rich. And so I love it just because of the music. I love the culture. I love the writing. You know, I have my own critique. I've read, like, I think, you know, because D is a writer as well, I've read a gazillion critiques of it. But I also love the fact that Nelson George is a part of, who I have a lot of respect for.
Absolutely.
Nelson George, who's a hip hop enthusiast. I love the fact that Nas is a part of it. Grandmaster Flash is a part of it. And so, you know, they also brought in some folks who have some theater backgrounds, some folks who won some major awards. So I think it was a good marriage of that. And I'll get into some of my critique a little later on. But I love the fact who, you know, if people don't know about hip hop, this is a great mecca to learn it. Mm-hmm. Now, my daughter, on the other hand, who's younger, she just really got into it. And it may be an age factor, D. I'm not sure. She loves hip hop, but, you know, I think they love a watered down version of it. Mm-hmm. So I figured she would like it because the actors like Jade Smith and some other folks were in near her age group. But it was hard for her to follow as well.
Awesome.
But she's going for a second round. I think she's getting into it as well. So that's sort of my take on it.
Mm-hmm. What about you, D?
So I read a lot of different critiques too, and normally I can't commit to a television show unless it's recommended by like three people I respect. You know, I had three people I respect that have to say, yo, sit down, you gotta watch this show. The three, and they normally write, you know, some of the best television shows I ever saw came from that. So with some of the reviews that I read, you know, what I took away from them is like, you know, one, these people obviously never worked in film or never worked on a project because they don't understand how these things work.
Mm-hmm.
Two, some of them was just hating. I'm like, yo, it has to be something with this show because, you know, why is this dude hating? Like, he straight up, like, I read a review by a dude who straight up hating. Like, you know, they said the main concert when the show opens up took place in 1997. I mean, 1996. They should have said 1997. I'm like, yo, come on, dog. Like, so, you know, so that made me watch. Now, what I will say is that so, you know, and it's balanced. So there is some parts in the show that are historically inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it never claims to be 100%. It's a, you know, it's based
right,
on.
It's not a documentary.
It's not a documentary, yeah, and yeah, it's not a piece of nonfiction art. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fictionalized. So, it was really, really special for me because I remember reading about the Savage Warlords and I remember reading about the fires in the Bronx and just visually getting like a different feeling of what was going on when these things was going down made the show ill to me. And just like that in combination with the passion, like, you know, it's good for our young people to see some people who are that age because these were kids, but like, you know, when the scene when he's dangling the Flash mixtape in front of them, it's like, you know, they're foaming at the mouth. So it's like it's this new thing. It's from the bottom. It comes from a place of pain, and young people are getting the opportunity to just see, like, yo, it's, you know, there was a time where people your age were creating, you know, a original art form that was created in America, and I think the film is a great starting point. Mm-hmm. So I still think that young people who really, really love the culture and love hip hop should get out there. They should read books. You know, you can throw them out there. I know one good one is Can't Stop, Won't Stop.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Jeff Chang joint. Yeah. So, you know, read some of these books about hip hop and where it came from. But the film would do a good job in putting these things into context. Just like if you show a young person Malcolm X, of course, it's not everything in the book, but it's a good, it puts it into context and it gives you like a guide, because you need these things in the era of attention deficit disorder.
Yeah. And it creates a conversation. I remember when David and I, we were in the ULI, we have had the opportunity to write a book with Afeni Shakur, you know, God bless her for making a transition. We wrote a book called Rhyme and Reason. And it's interesting, on the cover, D, we put a white kid and it looked like a magazine, but it was a curriculum because we knew in the 90s cats was trying to use hip hop and as a way to engage young people. And on the cover it says, "What color is hip hop?" And so you see this white kid on the cover of this magazine, and then you see him holding a boombox, and then you go into the activities, and you're saying, wow, man, if I don't really do my history right, and like I tell my son, he's going to tell his grandkids that Asian folks discovered hip-hop music if we don't control it. And so this movie is that important, where you see a disparate group of people, black and brown people, black and Latino folks at the core of what this is doing. It's hip-hop music. Right. And not only just and DJ said it, it is a piece of art form, man. It is an art. You know, they talk about, I don't know if you remember the scene when they were on a rooftop, and if you know anything about, Native American culture, they talk about East, you know, they do this transition when babies are born, they face them in different directions. Mm-hmm. And then they said over there on the East, you know, this side, you got Grandmaster Flash on that side,
right.
You know, you got Bambada on that side, you got Hurt. And I thought it was a great depiction and an honor to show these DJs what they've actually, because they were in different boroughs, you know, in Chicago, we North, South, East, West, Baltimore the same way, but they had these huge boroughs, man. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of fighting taking place, a lot of gang activity. And then you also look at the beautiful graffiti. There's a great book out that came out in the 90s about about the politics of graffiti, that people weren't just putting graffiti on these walls. These were messages, just like the messages of slaves when they were putting these messages, when they were intertwining these messages inside of fabric, inside of, you know, sheets and blankets when people were going place to place. It's the same thing with these trains. These trains were going through these communities, and they didn't have cell phones back then. So what did they do? They used the Underground Railroad, right. No pun intended, the railroad, the train, and they spray painted those trains. So when you talk about the elements, I think the elements in this piece are very, very clear. But like D said, don't stop here. It is not true. A lot of this stuff is sort of misconfused. But again, it's TV. It's entertainment.
It's TV.
And a lot of these folks can't understand. Folks can't sit through documentaries.
But how can you write like a 50 million word critique come on, dog. Like, you know.
Yeah, the Cat in Time magazine chewed it up. I was really disappointed. Yeah, that's when you were talking, I'm like, you sound like the cat that was in the Time magazine that was just chewing the thing up. But again, you know, if you weren't, it's an opportunity to see what the possibility. I love this transition from disco, because I always wanted, you know, man, what happened to disco? And then I knew house music emerged.
Right.
And then I, growing up in Chicago, I was like, man, I was a house head. I'm like, man, hip hop ain't gonna take over house music. Right. Boom.
But it did.
It took over.
We get one small little slice of our history being documented in its origin, and it's like, you know, well, all these people with these brilliant critiques, where are you at in the creation process?
Indeed,
like, what are you really creating?
But that's the thing. It's good that they weren't a part of the creation process, because the story would have gotten whitewashed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like one of the things that I was really paying attention to was it showed like how hip hop spread, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there were no mixtapes, nobody standing around on the corner, because you know, we don't really have a context for that.
Yeah.
It's like these coveted tapes where they're taping these live shows, and you got to know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. And it's like you said, the tapes, you know, these cats was foaming at the mouth over the tape, and then they use the tape to put on their own show.
And then
got jammed up by Grandmaster
Flash. Oh, yeah, man.
For fronting, right.
I don't, you know, creatively, you know, like, to properly introduce the world, I don't see how they could have split that first episode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how they could have. I thought about that a lot, and I was like, yo, was I vested enough after that first hour?
Yeah.
To really watch another episode. I don't really see creatively how they could have split that episode. I think they kind of needed that movie, like, first episode one. And then two, one of the most ill things for me is I was born in the 80s, right? So, like I think about my older cousin Kevin and like, you know, I think of my older brother and some of them dudes from the 70s, and Shaolin Fantastic was that dude,
was
that guy.
Yeah,
whereas though, he's like, yo, he's so dope, he do karate, he can hoop.
Everybody did karate in the 70s and
80s. He'd be like, you know, I'm a little kid in the 80s, we in awe, like, yo, like, yo, how do you know about comic books, playing basketball, selling dope, being a Boy Scout, doing karate.
Right.
And like, do you know how to, like, you know, I was watching, a good example of that is I was on the internet the other day watching through videos, and, you know, I saw Cam'ron, you know, who's known as a rapper, right? I saw Cam'ron make lamb chops, shrimp scampi, and like, so, like, you know, like five star type meal, and I'm like, yo, only them dudes from the 70s, like, they just like, you can't do it, you don't know.
Right.
And, you know, so he brought me that nostalgia back as a kid, me following my cousin all up and down East Baltimore, all through the projects, all over, like, you know, Green Mountain, all just following him around, and, you know, this dude, like, 10, 11, 12 years old, knowing and shaking hands with adults and trading right, money with them right, and playing cards. Like, how do you know this stuff? Right. Like, I think my generation, we, you know, we, I don't know if we took too much lead paint or something. Like, right, we just, we just don't, we don't have that magic like that. So Shaolin brought that nostalgia for me.
Yeah, and for me, I was thinking back to like indigenous cultures and like the importance of the elder, the importance of the person that came before you. And it's like, you're trying to emulate that guy who was ahead of you, that was doing all this. And the same thing with Shaolin Fantastic. Yeah. He was a student. He's a student of the Grand Master.
Indeed.
And it's like, and the way they freaked the whole kung fu thing. And
because that was big, man. Everybody, you know, you had a pair of karate shoes, brother.
Black Belt Theater. Black Belt Theater.
Saturday mornings after the cartoons. Man, that was like home for me. And like, I was trying to tell my kids about it. And he was like, man, what is this cat talking about? I was like, it's kung fu.
Well, and I also like how they explained that whole breakbeat, because it was called the Get Down, man.
Yes.
And he explained what that actually meant, man.
Yeah.
And I think just the whole technique of DJing, not the electronic DJing with the MacBook and things of that nature. Right. DJ Quicksilver, who happened to be one of my former students when I was in City, Quick put on Facebook recently, he took a picture of some crates and was talking about how cats charge you for crates now, man. Yeah, he said, right. I remember back in the day, we get the free milk crates and we take them in. Mm-hmm. And so there is a lesson, there's a valuable lesson, but there's also this line of eldership, as you said, that there's the elders that you go through. But then I don't want us to also miss Jimmy Smith's role as the councilman in the Bronx, the Puerto Rican brother, who basically, I mean, he had his hand and tooth. You know, he was almost like a Robin Hood, man.
Yeah,
he wanted to make sure that the black and brown folks in that neighborhood was taken care of. But he was also with some hood cats.
He was doing a little shady stuff.
He was doing a little shady, which we still see. And I'm sure that character who knows who he is is still around.
You're right.
And probably just like the folks on the wire who deny that they're not that person.
Right.
You know, there's some truth somewhere in that story. And so, but I think we got to talk about also how these folks knew the power of what was going on. Then you talk about gentrification, man.
Right,
you know, I first
heard
of Ed Koch. I was watching Saturday Night Live, and I was saying, who is this dude? And he became this sort of rock star. But when you look at this, you look at how look at what's taking place in the Bronx and Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. This stuff was talked about in hip-hop music in the 70s and the 80s. Mm-hmm. We can't even afford those homes in those communities right now.
Right.
And back then, they're talking about bringing in all these resources. But he said, make sure my people are taken care of. And a lot of time, we don't see politicians or political cats doing that.
No, they're not, man. Make sure I take care of whatever the big, rich, white interest is going to be piling up Baltimore, because I'm going to get a job when I'm coming out of office.
And so hip-hop exposed a lot of that, man.
So hip-hop exposed a lot of that.
The scene when Ezekiel was giving that speech and he was reading off the signs on the train, mm-hmm. and the elders and the politicians, they didn't know it, but the people, the grassroots people was like, oh, I'm feeling with this dude. It's because the reality is, and you know this, D, from working with kids, we got to teach our boys how to somewhat code switch. He had an opportunity. Ezekiel had an opportunity to speak in because he was chosen. You know, he was chosen. And then he decided not to sell out by reading the images that was on those trains. And then people started to understand where he was coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's so many underground messages. When you read these lyrics, these cats ain't just making some of this stuff up. You got to go. I mean, I might just go through my book and read. You know, when NWA was talking about after Poe, I'm like, man, I'm reading this stuff. Like, man, it must be crazy in Compton, man. They were saying this in 87.
Right, right.
Now we talking about police brutality, man. These cats were talking about it years ago, man.
And, you know, for me, in terms of the cultural context of the political climate that we're experiencing now, like, I feel like this show is right on time.
Perfect.
You know, it's perfect. It's perfect timing for the message, for what's happening, because you can easily make a juxtaposition between what's happening with us right now in Baltimore and throughout the country and what was happening with those kids in 1977, and an opportunity to create something, an opportunity to push the culture forward. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's hip-hop, whether it's rap music, whether it's something else, whether it's writing, you know, an opportunity to make your voice heard by whatever your gifts are, right? Because you got a graffiti artist, you got a dancer, you got a singer, you got fashion folks who are pushing it forward with, like you said, like with this passion. And that's the thing I really liked, and I think that's really inspiring for anybody who's watching to remember if you were around, but if you're new, you like to understand, it's like, oh, I do have a voice. I do have something that I can contribute. I do have something to say.
And I like how he played up that Latino voice, man. Yeah, I mean, I really do. Folks who live in other places don't understand the complexity of what that means in New York City. You got Haitians and Jamaicans, and you have Dominicans, you have Puerto Ricans. And I like how they played that voice. I mean, I think Giancarlo Esposito plays a great, you know, typical Puerto Rican dad, man, who's like, yo, you know, we got strong roots. And I love the juxtaposition between he and his brother. He had to remind him, dude, this is how we came up.
Right.
Don't get it twisted. You know, I know your story because you got a story. And the brother, the politician, like, I got to remind you where you actually Brothers, that's what it's about. It's not about exposing people. It's about reminding people that we all came from somewhere. And I love the fact that it's showing people, and I'm hoping people across the country understand, don't allow these messages, Trump and all these other folks, to separate disparate people, brown people who may speak a different language but understand a similar struggle. And this film is a great depiction in reminding us the powerful voice that folks from the Caribbean and folks of Latin America played a major role in this music, man. It's I think we forget that it's night and day.
It's night and day, because if you look at it, right, you know, Donald Trump steps up, and all of the people who support him, and they make these open ended promises that are never gonna happen, right? Mm-hmm. They say I'm great, and you know we're gonna do great, and I can fix this and I can fix that without doing any work.
That's right.
And that's the mentality, like across like a huge part of this country. People think that they can be great without actually doing the work. So these kids in this film, where it ties together, these kids in these films, they wasn't doing this for money.
That's right.
Was doing it because they wanted to create something that they could call art. They wanted to create. They wanted to be the best at what they did. I'm going to be the best at spinning records. I'm going to be the best wordsmith. I'm going to be the best B-boy. I'm going to do this, you know, and I'm going to put that work in, and then the success came. The reason why so many people get burnt now and why so many people would get burnt if they actually elected this clown is that, like, you can't just jump up there and say, yo, America's the greatest country in the world, when we lag in education, indeed, we lag in healthcare, infant mortality, we lock up the most people, you know, we spend the most on war, more than all our allies combined. Like, we do all of these things that make us horrible, but people just say that they're great just because they're saying that they're great, and they're not really doing anything great. So I think one thing that a lot of young people should take away from this film is that these kids didn't jump into the hip-hop game just to try to get rich.
Yeah.
They jumped in there to be the best artist, to be the best artist, and to create something that you can call art. And that's, you know, that only passion can do that, and that's where real success comes from. Not just saying you're great just to say you're great, but actually putting in them hours to be great.
To be great. All right, we got to take a quick break. On our way to break, I'd like to remind you, from school funding to testing, you can learn about the important issues impacting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. We'll be right back.
It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Welcome back to the Mark Steiner Show, and I'm Denzel Mitchell filling in for Mark Steiner. Make sure you call in and give us your thoughts at 410-319-8888. We want to hear what y'all think about this show, man. We love the show. We're going back for a second and third round, so we want to hear your thoughts. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner, and you can tweet me at Five Seeds Farm. Telephone number again is 410-319-8888. So, D, we was talking on the break about how this show represents the you know, what we would have called ghettos or the hoods of America in the 70s, but now as it's the show is entertainment, and we see that a lot of these very same neighborhoods are being gentrified. What kind of impact does a show like this have on what's happening in our cities?
It's the lack of progression. It's, you know, that's the part that's sad, is that, you know, you see a kid in a messed up school from something that took place like over 30 years ago, and then you walk into some of these schools now and you see the same thing. And, you know, as far as like in my line of work and what I do with kids in schools and things like that, I look in the mirror and I ask myself, like, yo, you know, how are you going to feel if another 30 years pass and you've been in this game that long and everything still looks the same? Like, what am I doing? What am I doing wrong? What am I missing? Or what are we missing? Or are we just not really acknowledging, like, the bigger picture from things that's going on right now? So I think about that. And then I think about the land grab, you know, just burn the buildings down, kick the people out. And then, you know, developing when that fresh new corporate money comes in for people who aren't really going to get a chance to benefit from that. Yeah. You know, even, you know, New York is just, it's a different place. Like, the Bronx is still one of the only semi-affordable places to live in New York, but they coming too.
Right. And then you could juxtapose that gentrification about gentrification of music too, man.
Mm.
How, I mean, there's a huge metaphor that exists right there, man, how this change is taking place in lyrics, how it's being used, the conversation they're actually talking of, that they're dealing with. Not only just the physical structure, the sort of the spirit of this movement, because this was a battle cry. This music was sort of about, when you think about one of the dopest songs, man, is The Message, man.
The Message, right.
I mean, think about that, dude. Right. That's one of the dopest songs, man, that's out. If you don't know The Message, man, The Message is really is what hip hop is. It describes everything that was taking place. You can play that right now, and you can maybe add some upbeat, some new tempos to it, and a young person would think that that was taking place right now. So these prophets, these urban prophets, were then letting us know how the buildings were coming down, how they were exploiting these individuals, how the music is starting to change. So now is this gentrification about that? Then I think about Boys in the Hood, one of my favorite movies.
Absolutely.
Man, I think about when Lawrence, he was Larry Fishburne then,
Larry,
brother.
Larry.
Y'all don't know that. He's Lawrence Fishburne, brother guy. But he was Larry Fishburne when he walked Trey and his boy up there, and he talked about gentrification. We talking, this was in the 90s. We had never, think about this. I had never heard of that word.
I hadn't either.
And I'm looking at this.
They dropped that gym on Do the Right Thing, too.
Oh, yeah, Do the Right Thing.
Do the Right Thing,
Spike
too.
Lee meant on that.
When he stepped on the Pumas, the Jordan, when he stepped on the Air Jordan.
Oh, man, come on.
Yeah.
That's my man for the Get Down.
I know. I saw so many Pumas in the Get Down that I'm thinking, I had Pumas on the brain a little bit. But they crushed it, man. Like, you know, I've written about other people, and I've written a lot of different things outside of my own voice for other people, and you never catch everything. You just don't. And it's so difficult. It's difficult to do it in a book. Yeah. It's even more complex and difficult to do it in a film. Plus, with the fact that, you know, history is still history. You know, if all three of us went, we are going to go out different ways today. And when we look back and talk about this show, we are going to walk away with a different story.
Indeed.
We also, it's never going to be just one perspective that gets everything.
And then somebody who lived in that era during the 70s in the Bronx is like, man, you know, it was a rough time. But they also may say, but man, it was someone, because we look at it, like we look at the Harlem Renaissance, we think Langston Hughes, Zora Neale Hurston,
so
we think these cats was kicking it. We think
they
were just getting high, writing poetry, and man, Negroes were struggling, man.
Yeah, they was going
and so through it. We look at the beauty of it, but I think out of that beauty comes this great art form, and I think that that's the beauty of people of color. That's the richness that people that we have, those individuals who struggle. Out of that pain comes this beautiful art form. And so it is sad to see to go up in Brooklyn and now you can't afford a house. It's sad. Like, I grew up in Chicago. We had the largest housing projects in the country, man. 35th to 55th, man. Minister Farrakhan, I never forget, like in 1999, he said in those housing projects, Robert Taylor's, he said they spent over $25 million on the lottery alone. And you say we don't have money. In 1999, $25 million on the lottery. And so, again, we also have fallen for the okey-doke. And so, yeah, we know what America has done, but then we have drunk the Kool-Aid, and we've decided that we're just going to go along and get along, and it has to somewhat change. And so I think that the film is a way for us to look back and say, we cannot allow this again on our own watch. We cannot allow a person like Ed Koch, who's depicted in this film, because Ed Koch can be a council person here.
Yeah.
He can be our governor here. He or she could be the mayor here.
So we
got to be definitely mindful of these spaces, you know, these spaces that they're tearing down. As you said, now they're having these huge parties and things of that nature on the shoulders, on the backs of black and brown people and poor folk.
So did y'all, was there any characters that y'all hated in the show? Like, was it that character, like that protagonist or that antagonist that you didn't like? Cause I didn't I hate Cadillac.
Cadillac
reminds me of one of them junkies I came up with. Like one of them dudes that used to be doing disco in the 70s and then the 90s come around and he toothless and stealing video games and carrying a refrigerator on his back up Miami Street. Like, I ain't like Cadillac, man. But I didn't like Cadillac.
I think they did a really good job of, like, providing that.
I didn't like Mylene either.
You didn't like Mylene?
No, I didn't like Mylene.
I don't think Mylene.
She was phony, dog.
I don't think she was a strong actor. I don't think.
She was a user. Forget her acting skills. She used that man every time she got a chance.
I'm thinking about the acting skills.
Let's talk about character development. Let's just act like she's not. She's not a rookie. She ain't even had nothing to say to that man. I don't want you because you're a loser. But then when she needed a little record flip, she banging on the door.
She definitely needed to slip through the cracks. I don't think Jaden.
She tried to make that man sell out.
I don't think Jaden Smith's character was that strong. I didn't really feel. I mean, he seen, and I knew, for those that had seen, I knew the homosexual piece was going to come out. I already picked up on the white dude. Because my daughter, like, did you hear what happened? I'm like, I already knew before I saw it. But Jaden didn't, and I don't know if it was because they wrote it that way, he didn't seem that confident. To me, as an actor, he doesn't seem that strong.
And it was supposed to be, like, this eccentric, like, artistic type of dude. But I really wish that they would have used him as an actor to flesh out Graffiti more, and maybe they'll do that.
I didn't really get
you know, because that's the thing.
I thought he was like he reminded me of like a kid that smelt too much paint.
Yeah, exactly.
I got that. It wasn't like, you know, he wasn't as annoying as my
maybe. See, I'm thinking maybe Basquiat is gonna come in and see one. I'm thinking maybe Basquiat, because you know his lifestyle,
right?
So I'm thinking, okay, maybe this cat gonna meet Basquiat, Andy Warhol down the line or something.
But see, that's what I was saying about the first episode. It's like they try to introduce all the elements. Yeah. They try to introduce all the characters.
And
you get,
then here's another
time.
Thing. I don't know if you talked about the budget on this thing was humongous.
Well, yeah, it was like
it was a huge budget.
Yeah. Oh, really?
They had a huge budget. Huge. So I don't know if they were just trying to exasperate all the money before it come back.
Before it got cut.
But they spent a lot of money on. But Mylene, you're right. She used my man. He fell for it, and he seemed kind of, well, you know, he didn't seem strong. And what I love about this, it showed the. You know, this side, and I know you grew up in the hood. I grew up in the hood in Chicago, but it showed this boy side of us that we do have emotions, because you could be hood with your boys.
I like books, but then you get that phone call,
and you sort of dip off.
I get that.
But you said emotion.
I wore his platform shoes before.
I like the emotional
metaphorically.
Because they showed him crying.
We could be like, man, you know, forget those girls. We don't say, then this one dude. Denzel done dipped off with his girl after he done like, man, forget them so-and-so.
Right.
I love to see that part of us, because that we know, my research talks about, boys are more emotional than girls. We know that. Mm-hmm. And so this is an opportunity to even show that. And so even with the Jaden character, the whole sexual piece, but he just looks spaced out the whole joint.
You know, like, what I don't, we're going to go back to that first episode. One of the things, and you just said this briefly, but one of the things that bothered me was that it was really, really, really didactic at times. Like, it was almost like you don't respect the viewers. Mm-hmm. Like, we can see the art is beautiful enough to be in the gallery.
Right.
So we don't need you to say, get me some paintbrushes, some easels. It's going to be in the gallery, and one day Jay-Z's going to rap about it 20 years later.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
I didn't need all of that.
Like, we don't need that. But I think, I think sometimes, you know, and it bothers me. Like, so, like, I, you know, normally I'm an easy guy to edit when I'm writing, but then sometimes I go to war with editors when they want me to just bust down and flesh out the most simple ideas. Like, yo, this idea is so simple. Yeah, but they're like, but people are even more simple. So if you want to reach the masses, you have to really make sure you know, you got to explain this to us in a way that they can get it. So sometimes it was too teachy and too preachy. Like, you know, like, and I think maybe like another way to do that versus just giving it to you is like, but then a voiceover wouldn't have fit in that film. Who's gonna do it? Like, I guess they had Nas.
They kind of had Nas.
I love Nas. My favorite rapper, I don't want him doing voiceover.
He was narrating.
I know. My favorite rapper, I don't want him doing.
Yeah. Yo, but then you also that's how it was.
My favorite rapper, I don't want him doing voiceover. And I don't like the guy either. I don't want this guy lip singing either.
That's my man from the play, man. That's the cat from the play.
That's Nas, isn't it?
No.
It's Nas rapping, but it's dude from Hamilton, right?
From Hamilton. That's the cat from Hamilton.
But it's Nas rapping.
All right, so
but Nas' lyrics are dope, man. To be able to write those lyrics for that, hey, man.
I actually wasn't feeling Hamilton either. I guess that's another note.
For real?
I don't feel nothing about Alexander Hamilton at all.
Maybe the historical figure.
I'm not feeling appropriation. I'm not feeling that. Like, I'm not into it at all. Not even a little bit.
See, that's a whole nother conversation.
I'm not into it.
Because Cass about to call up right now. I just spent
$1,000. Tell him, call up. Hey,
he
man.
He didn't hate nobody.
410-319-8888. D-Walk is sitting here first.
Put it on D-Walk. I ain't got a ticket yet, so I don't want to disrespect anybody who's going to donate a ticket to the Shields campaign.
this is a sacred art form, man, not to be exploited by, you know, historic racists. Like, I'm not with it, man.
But it's
like,
interesting that they did use a guy from Hamilton to sort of juxtapose that, you know.
That's true.
Because they do
use hip-hop. That mean he on his glow up. He shot. I'm inspired by him. He killed
him. You heard him rhyme, though, right?
No, I heard it. I heard it. Yeah. I'm down with it. I had tickets to it before it even came out like that because I was writing for NPR.
Okay.
I was like, I was on the ground early and I was watching it and I was like, yo, this is gonna
But you gotta respect, if you haven't read Miranda's story, his grind though, to where he got to, man.
No, I respect it.
I mean, you gotta respect.
I
respect Fast Company did a great piece on him.
I respect it. I respect it. But like, when you're talking about something that came from the poorest parts of the African and Latino community.
Yeah, indeed.
And you're just trying to what's next? W. Bush? You know what I'm saying? Like, seriously, like, what's next? Like, you know, we gonna do the Aaron Burr diss track. You know what I'm saying?
That's like Obama loving Lincoln. That's a whole other conversation.
That's the dude that smoked them, right? Thomas Jefferson, vice president, smoked them, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, this is why you always got to play with Al stuff. Go play with your stuff. Why you got to play with Al stuff? Why you got to manipulate and play with Al stuff? Like, them dudes would really be feeling music coming from us if we was alive in them times. Like, he not rolling, you know, if it's a such thing as rolling in your grave, like, he not spinning in his grave right now, you know, because we taking this evil, devilish art form from the jungle monkeys and dampering my legacy with it. I ain't with it, man. Get your own, dog.
See, I ain't seen it. I just read the stories about my man.
I mean, just the fact that like,
I know the fact that
Alexander Hamilton
and
hip hop don't mix. It's not a place for it.
Indeed.
Do a rock and roll theater. You know what I'm saying?
You got to bring Little Richard in, brother.
Yo, do something like that, man. But leave hip hop alone, man. Like, leave it alone, man. You want to manipulate it, demonize it, pimp it, rearrange the story, step on it, stretch it out of shape.
Smack it, flip it, rub it down.
Yo,
down.
Give it to MC Hammer, Vanilla Ice, and
Matt. Hey, man, don't talk about Hammer, brother. Hey, why you talking about Hammer? That's a whole other thing.
Hammer Petty.
Did you see what your boy had a conversation about Hammer? Redman.
Oh, word.
Google the Redman joint when they were dissing Hammer. Just go YouTube Redman talking about Hammer.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, dude. Redman said Hammer is the truth. When MC Searching
Redman,
all. Yeah. No, just Google
Redman.
Redman. Redman said, yo, Redman. I'm a dude. But that whole thing when I diss Hammer, he said when he went to Cali and Hammer was like, yo, you know, Hammer from Oakland is the gutter, man. Redman talked about how he dissed Hammer and Hammer sent some cast to see him.
Yeah.
Go Google. It's a great piece.
I believe that, though, because his entourage was 60 people.
Yeah.
Right. Yo, but you check this out. A latte in Oakland is $78 now.
What?
No, it's not. But it's expensive, though. Like, Oakland is like, I'm about to go out there. I just came back. No, I just came back from the Bay Area.
I like Oakland, man.
No, I love the Bay Area, man.
How do we get from Oakland to Hamilton to George Washington?
I mean, I'm just saying.
The genius, man. We got the genius sitting next to us. So speaking of education, man, I've taught hip-hop classes, and I will most certainly, if I ever get to teach a hip-hop class again, high schoolers, I will most certainly use this. This Word. Series, man.
No doubt.
Most certainly.
No, I would use it, too.
Mm-hmm. It's a great piece. When we wrote our book, man, Rhyme and Reason, man, I think I watched every documentary, man, that you can think of, man, to really get the great piece of this music. But just like it, man, every year I got to update the curriculum, man.
Yeah, you do.
Because the language is changing, the richness is changing. I mean, it's a great way for those that are looking to create a conversation about hip-hop. Again, you know, you can go over the critique if you want to teach a creative writing class, talk about the critique. But when you talk about the genesis of where this came from, the richness of how it was started and those, I think it's a lot to stay. And then a lot of people are teaching classes on hip hop. A lot of folks are. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got some issues with how some of them are teaching. But some of them, I mean, you got MK Asante here. My man MK here, Morgan's right. teaching a class on hip hop.
Jared's still teaching here too.
You should.
Jared Ball, right?
You should at the end of the day, and this is something that we really, really fumble the ball on when we always talk about what is African American culture in this country or what is our established culture. And this is a huge part of it. This is us. Mm-hmm. So it's something that our young people or all of our people should be able to take pride in because this is an original American art form created here that is like a multi-billion dollar industry that's respected and praised and duplicated and imitated worldwide. We should be proud. Like, grandmothers and grandfathers should be walking down the street beating their chest. that's right. Like, you know, we really should be up in cafes with cardigans on and little lattes talking about, oh my God, but the '90s. You know, the '90s. You gotta talk about, bring up Noriega. Yeah. You know, we should be able to do that because we created that, and it's a part of our culture, and it ties in everything from our stories to our struggles to our triumph when we're successful. Like, we shout out our hero. Like, I learned about the Black Panthers and Malcolm X through hip hop.
Dude,
like,
Public Enemy.
I didn't learn that in school.
So no. Then you understand why young people are sort of blind to that, because very few artists are giving those particular shout outs. You just said P, KRS-One, you know, Ice Cube. You know, Brand Nubians, but they were reading those books and they were talking about the cultures, X-Clan.
People still won't accept it, but we created that, and we should be proud.
But that's the thing. That's a problem. We're not proud of it. Like, that legacy, even that political legacy that was celebrated in the 90s, it's like you just said, and you were saying, nobody's doing that now.
Well, man, at the
we're not respecting the culture.
At the opening of each chapter in my book, what I learned Mr. Chaos and making of an Ubuntu teacher, every chapter opens up with a hip-hop quote. And I tell folks, man, from Harvard to Yale to Hopkins to Wilberforce to Grambling, where I went, I'm a hip-hop head.
Right.
And I got to pay homage to that, because those listening to that music, the PEs of the world, I was still a KRS-One fan. Mm-hmm. That really challenged me. It sent me back to then start to read and research. So I decided that when I decided to write my seminal book, which is about my educational experience, it would not be right if I didn't include that. When I was teaching Spanish here at City College, man, I exposed kids to reggaeton, you know, hip-hop, Latin music. Man, you walk through the door, man, I was giving them this music, man, because I wanted them to understand that this is who we are and be proud of who we are.
I was in a boxing high school, man. I couldn't.
Oh, man, you'd have loved my class. I know, brother. Man. I had incense burning, man. You walked in. Oh, that was Mr. Shields. He got in. And I talked.
Reggaeton again, Mr. Shields.
Come on,
Daddy
man.
Yankee again.
Oh, man, I was hitting hard, brother. They didn't know what the hell it was saying, but they knew something, man. They knew it was Spanish.
And speaking to them, and I mean, it resonates with you. In a place that you, in a subconscious place.
And it was important, because when I rarely talked about Mexico. I talked about Cuba. I talked about Honduras. I talked about Nicaragua. I talked about Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic, because I wanted those kids to see those folks, man, that look like them, man.
When they walk, Trump will put a wall over all that.
What'd you say?
Donald Trump will put a wall over all that. He told me he's going to put a wall around my diamond. I was like, dang, man.
Until you're going to pay for it.
Right. I know, right?
You got to expect this. His thuggery, though, man. You know, he a straight up thug, man. He says it. I mean, that's the one thing, you know, as you say, real respects real and gangster respect gangster. Now, the positive, but for him to say what he, because he believe what he's saying.
He believes what
and
he's
that's
saying.
That's the power of the music. You know, I believe what I'm saying.
It's just like bad music. It's just like poisonous music. It's like, you know, it's all emotional. He's speaking to emotional. He used zero logic. It's like the whole other side of his brain doesn't work.
Indeed.
You know what I'm saying? Like too much toupee sauce or something. Like I think he's missing a screw or something. But it's just like bad music, man. That dude just get up there. He got eight lines. He know them eight lines to death.
Indeed.
I was writing an article, then I changed my mind, dog. Like I've been working on this ESPN piece for a while, so I went back to that. But I stopped last night. And I started writing an article about his visit to the Black church and how stupid that was. And I'm like, yo, I'm mad at the people at the black church. Like, yo, like, my grandmother went to church, dog. Like, she wouldn't play that. She wouldn't go for that. Like, Donald Trump touching my kids. Are you out of your mind? Like, I don't care how much Jesus you pray to or what you forget. Come on. You're not letting Donald Trump kiss your kids for a photo op. What is that? Like, we too strong for that, dog. Like, you think it's cute that this dude is walking around in your church, dog? Like, that's disrespectful to the grandmothers, to the ancestors, to Jesus. This dude's a cool. Boom, he's a clown. Like, he just told you all these months he don't like you, and you know he's dead because he's voted. No other reason would he walk into a black church in Detroit ever, unless he bought it and made it into like a dog park or something. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
he want these people.
Come on, why y'all playing games, man? Like, you want to be on TV that bad? Like, you want to be seen? You already got a mega church.
Yeah,
you already got a mega church.
And
so
that's
why
the
you,
thing.
Why,
we,
come on,
we,
why you
we
playing
fall
with these
for it
people?
All the time.
Right, we do. We fall for it all the time.
Come on, and that's why so many people in this generation is disenchanted with it. Mm-hmm. I know so many young people that won't even step foot inside of a church.
Right.
I don't go because the black churches, they just talk too much. Yeah. But young people got real reasons for not going. I just don't want to sit still for 6 hours.
That's crazy. The guy who get paid for talking don't want to listen to nobody else talk.
He
get paid
talk.
For talking, but he don't want to listen.
It's long, you know. It's
but
long.
You're right. But it makes
go to Catholic, go to Catholic church, and brother. 45 minutes. You want it now? You're gonna get an exercise. You're gonna stand up, sit down, kneel.
I think
down,
it's an app for that too. I think they got an app where you can get in 30. God know I'm joking. God, hey, you know I'm joking. God know I'm joking.
God everywhere.
God know I'm joking.
She good with it. Now my grandmother, I feel a little uncomfortable.
I like you, grandma. I'm just playing.
Well, you
sorry.
Know, it's interesting. That goes back to the get down. This whole separation with this whole church.
Yeah,
piece,
the church
how the church
and the
was created, and how she didn't want him to. How Mylene, they didn't want her seeing this type of music. If Mylene's voice is whack, that's a whole nother piece. I don't know who's singing for Mylene. The whole group, the whole three of them are whack.
Okay.
But again.
Man, you can help me with this. You can help me with this, Doc. Help me with this. What was the relationship between the uncle
and
the
wife.
Mob.
And the mom.
So
I think there had been some love interest, and she decided to go with the one.
Is she on his team?
Yeah, because
I think she was on his team.
I'm like, yo, is she on the team?
The one time that he was in the house and they just looked at each other.
But then when she came back to his office.
And I'm hoping it doesn't get too watered down with as a soap opera. If they're going to deal with it, just deal with it and keep it moving, because it's going to sort of pull us into that. Because that's quite often, that's what we will tend to do, and we'll sort of miss that boat. But I think the fact that they're going to keep pulling it, because I was thinking about that in the doorway when he said, thank you for doing what you did.
I don't even think that was needed, though. Yeah. I don't even think all that. I think that whole scene, so I don't think that was needed. Yeah. But I tell you, my favorite line from the whole joint was, okay, you stay out here looking stupid while your girl was side getting served by a gangster. He's like, okay, wait up, I'm going to come in. He said, oh, you stay out here looking stupid while your girl inside getting served by a gangster. He's like, no, okay, I want to come in.
Did you think, old girl, what's her name, the big-time dope queen? I thought that was Angie Stone, man, the whole time.
Oh, no, I don't want
to. You know
Angie
the sister
Stone.
I'm talking about? She's
yeah,
like, she's
Fat Annie.
Big,
she Fat
like,
Annie.
I was like, is that
she
Angie
was
Stone?
Like, yeah, she
no,
was a... She was
so
a fictional
drop
character.
Weight, man.
She was a fictional character, but she was a bit OD too. You know, that was another thing. Like the mentioning like Nikki Bonds.
Oh, she played
over
Nikki
and over
Bonds,
again.
Man.
I don't really think. But I also understand, you know, like because it's some serious, some gangster, yeah. Some women are, you know, women run communities, you know, all types of communities.
Yeah. Sure. All right. So we got to stop it there. I had a great time. I had to prepare myself because I knew that I was going to be doing a lot of laughing today, so I had to control it. So I thank you, brothers, for coming in. We got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the City Paper. On our way to break, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at MeQ.com.
Break it up. If your woman steps out with another man,
that's the brakes.
And she runs off with him to Japan,
that's the brakes.
And the IRS says they want to chat.
Welcome back. This is Denzel filling in for Mark Steiner. I have Rebecca Kirkman, who's the visual arts editor for the City Paper, on the line, and she's going to talk about the City Paper this week. Rebecca, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So welcome to the show. I just wanted to have you sit down and go through some of these stories that are featured in the City Paper this week.
Yeah, so this issue is the annual college guide, which is put together by our summer editorial interns. And on a general scale, the kind of overarching theme is thinking critically about the academic institution. So, you know, how does the school affect its community? How does it influence its students? How do the students interact with their communities? How do they see themselves in this context? So we have several stories that kind of touch on that. We have a piece by Mia Capobianco about community-based learning courses at different schools around the area and kind of how they try to be mutually beneficial for both the school and the student and the community. But also how that can be difficult when there's some mistrust against institutions such as Hopkins, especially. And then so also Dania Washington kind of took a closer look at one of those programs, the Morgan Community Mile, kind of an in-depth snapshot of that kind of course in action. Jasir Kedar wrote a piece about how institutions kind of conflate diversity with inclusion and don't really always take care of their students of color when there are racist actions at schools. You know, the institution can kind of, they wield a lot of power, but they don't always act on those kinds of actions in a way that makes people feel okay.
Right. And diversity kind of speaks more to just bringing the numbers up, as opposed to inclusion is actually bringing those folks of color into the community and addressing their specific needs.
Yeah, and it's a huge like nationwide topic, of course. And Jasir looks closely at a couple of instances at UMD and also UMBC where things that happened kind of went viral a couple, I think last year and maybe a couple years ago.
Yeah, look, some text message. I think I saw some amount of text message at was that at College Park?
Yeah, so the one at College Park was like an email sent by a frat brother about a party, and it just was full of horrible racist language and also misogynistic language. It went around, and the university apologized. You know, they took it seriously, but also they were like, this isn't actually you know, violate First Amendment rights, even though it's like harmful and damaging to people who read it. And eventually the student was agreed not to come back to the school, I guess. But
oh wow,
yeah, it's weird. Yeah. So then we've got a couple other pieces. There's a lot in the issue, but Megan Jusek talks about student newspapers. Especially like noticing the past couple of years, you know, there seems like there's been an uptick in college activism, or especially in response to police brutality and in solidarity for Black people killed by police. So Megan kind of looks at the role that student newspapers can play in like recording, documenting this campus activism, and also how the newspaper can kind of be a bridge between the administration and the students, but also between the school itself and the outside community. Because if a student newspaper doesn't report on, like, you know, like the Towson protests last, I think it was last fall, that got a lot of traction in local media, maybe in part because the Towson Tower Light was able to be there and able to, like, report on it and speak to the activists and get their side of things.
Okay.
Wow. Which is cool.
All right, so that's this week's city paper, the College Guide. So lots of really interesting articles to read about that. So I am Denzel Mitchell again. I want to thank Mark Steiner and Mark Gunnery and staff for allowing me to sit in and fill in for Mark Steiner today. I want to thank Lamar Shields, co-founder and senior director of Education and Innovation for the Cameo Group and author of Chaos, Making of Urban Teacher, for sitting in for this conversation about to get down with us, and Dee Watkins, who's also an author and a thinker and a talker, for coming to sit down with us. And we'll look forward to seeing you soon. Take care.
technology, isolation, life is nation, life is nation.